everyone. Welcome to The Hours. This is a very special episode because we get another appearance by Claire. Claire is a member of our Savvy team. She is a phenomenal coach and teacher of the game, and she is also the director of operations at Savvy Coaching. Claire, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you. 2 months in a row. I'm excited. It's a good time.
We needed you to be a regular guest because when I was in Alaska doing a program clinic, the podcast that you did with Tyler was one of my all-time faves, which I guess should say something about me. But so we needed to have you back on. And I'm going to ask you the big question. But before the big question, I have a small question for you. How was your birthday?
Oh, birthday was good. Yeah, whole birthday week. I don't force a birthday week or a birthday month, but being home after a long time away, seeing a lot of people over the week has been really, really special. So my family, friends have made it awesome. Feel very blessed.
Awesome. Yeah, that's a kind of a good segue to the big question. I'm going to ask the question and I'll tell you why I'm asking you it before you go. So my question is, how do you enjoy the journey? And you can answer this from a player's perspective or a coach's perspective. I know most coaches are the ones listening, so maybe coach perspective. But I ask this because in our community, if you're not part of our Savvy community, you need to be. We'll put the link right there. I ask the question, what did you learn from last year that you're looking forward to applying this year? So what was like a big takeaway that you're eager to maybe fix or just do differently this year? And a couple coaches responded. And their response really resonated with me. One said, I got away from culture as the year went on. And another said, as issues came up, I kind of buried my head in the sand, tried to avoid them. And then, you know, small problems become big problems. And that resonated with me because as a coach myself and as somebody that travels the country and works with teams, I feel like this is the time where the vibes are the best. The culture is the best because you're in the gym, you're working. But you probably haven't played a game yet. So there's very little adversity that hits. And I find most cultures or most teams' attitudes, vibe deteriorate as the season goes. So big question for you. How do you make sure that you enjoy the journey?
That's a good one and very important because if you don't, you're probably not going to last, whether that's one season, 10 seasons, 30 seasons. And honestly, I saw a clip of Kobe yesterday that was perfectly related. It was an interviewer. She was asking him, are you somebody who is motivated by the love of winning more or motivated by the fear of losing more? And of course, Kobe being Kobe, just third doored it. Different answer. He was like, I'm neither of those people. That's not how I think. I think there's weaknesses in both. I play to figure things out. And I think that aligns very much with the Savvy mindset of like adversity strengthens. We're here to learn. Are you defining your own victories? Like, who are you as a person? Separating it from results. Because if you're motivated by just winning, if you don't, you've lost. If you're just afraid of losing, again, you're working from a place of fear and not really in control. Whereas just figuring things out, that's that growth mindset, learning, and you are very much in control of that because you can always learn something, you can always improve. And in that way, you've always won in a sense. So I was like, dang, Kobe has it figured out. And I feel like that relates very much personally to me. I'm sure some people would disagree. I operated from fear. I operated from being like very competitive and wanting to win. Yes. But ultimately how I enjoyed basketball despite injuries, after injuries, transitioning from player to coach was because I value community and I value learning. Those are my core values. So if I got to hang out with friends, win together, lose together, strengthen bonds through that, and learn something, like that ultimately was why I was there and why I stayed involved. So I think that's a roundabout way to say the common answer of like, how do you enjoy your journey? Remind yourself of your why or your core values, which for me, learning, connection, absolutely. That's what got me through. But then I think keeping that perspective throughout the season and throughout multiple seasons is huge for players and coaches. So like, I know I've had teammates, a teammate in college, like their house burnt down during the season. Terrible. Like whether we won that night, not the biggest deal, not the most important thing. Our coach's brother died like during season. Brings you together in a different way and just puts in perspective, like, it's a game. It's all going to be okay. There's things that matter more than this. And I think a tangible way to do that is even scheduling something in season, right? Like you might have to cancel it. You might have a conflict come up. I know seasons get crazy with just the schedule and everything. But if you can have something on the calendar, whether that's like a date with your spouse or a meetup with a friend that's easy to talk to, right? Like not somebody that you have to perform for, just somebody that you can be yourself and reminds you of the bigger picture, is something that I've done that's kind of like kept me grounded throughout that. So those are a couple for me, beyond just the belief that like sports aren't inherently good or inherently bad. You're not better because you're better at something. Like it's a neutral thing that you make positive or you make negative depending on how you approach it. So it's really a framing thing and what things can keep you grounded throughout that.
Yeah, it's really good. As far as like the framing goes, the way I would constantly remind myself to enjoy this is look for the good. If you look for the good in things, you will find it. If you look for the bad, unfortunately, you're going to find it too. So really important as coaches, just there's always, no matter how much adversity you face, or if things are never as good as they seem and they're never as bad as they seem. So it's your job to stay more regulated. I think as a coach, one of the most important things you can do is be consistent. So when your players show up, they know who you're going to be. And then they will take on that mindset as well. We always talk about consistency in our teams. If you're not consistent, it's very difficult for your team to perform consistent. So that would be one thing is let's look for the good. When we find the good, let's make sure we celebrate it. I know I was really guilty of this as a coach. When we did something bad, poor execution or, you know, below standard behavior, we want to go in and fix it. And then when something's operating above standard or we're executing at a high level, it's like, ah, this is the way it should be. You know, we don't have to shine a light on it. So make sure you're walking around with your spotlight, and then focus on direction instead of speed. Are we improving? Even though if we're not at the level that we want to improve or we're not improving as fast as we would like, as long as we're moving in the right direction, you're going to be a much better team towards the end of the year. Just think of those small incremental gains, those marginal gains that we're fighting for every day. And then I would encourage coaches to mix it up too. I think we all have those days where it feels like a grind. And coaches, this does not mean your team does not like basketball or they're not invested. But if it's feeling like a grind to you or your assistants, it felt like a grind to them 3 days ago. So if it ever feels grindy to you, I would say mix it up. One thing that we would do whenever we felt that grind starting to hit is give them a day off. If you don't want to give them a day off altogether, make it team time. Let's go bowling. Let's do something different. Let's do some kind of team building activity. I think the best way to build team is just time spent together. And then another thing we do at practice that I like, if you feel like you got to be in the gym, let them plan practice. And easy way to do that is get in your captain's council units, every unit pick their favorite drill or game that you do. And that becomes practice. So just give you a little bit more juice. It takes the responsibility off of you. If they pick the drill, they're probably going to do it at a higher level. And then last thing I'll say, and we could go on all day because I love the topic, but be the coach your team needs you to be. So just meet them where they're at. If they're low energy one day, let's be really intentional about how we communicate to the team, the kind of juice that we bring to the center court circle before practice. If they're a team that's a little bit too goofy, too high maybe, then make sure that you are grounded and getting them to be the team that you want to be, but also not expecting them to just be a perfect team every single day. Sometimes I think we walk in, we expect everything to be perfect. And then when it's not, it's hard to enjoy that process. But really your job as the coach is to get your team to the standard every single day. Sometimes you got to be more intentional about that than others.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. Finding the joy. It's a skill. I mean, to speak to your point of looking for the good, if any of you coaches are having trouble with that, that's okay. That's natural. Like, it is something that you have to practice. I saw somebody in our community ask the question, what is the 3-2-1 journaling? And we use that in a bunch of different ways, like with players, with shooting, after practice, before practice, just reflection. But as a coach, yeah, so three things that you did well. So you could do that before practice or after practice. Three things you did well, two things that you learned, and one thing that you want to improve on. But I'd say if you're having trouble finding the good, skew as far as you need to find as many good things to push yourself out of that comfort zone. Like I know we've suggested coaches start with 10. Find 10 good things, 10 things you did well, 10 things you liked in your players, 10 things you enjoyed that week. Then two things you learned and one thing you want to improve on. As you start noticing them more, then you can start maybe easing towards only three things once that's more of a default for you.
Yeah, I really like that. You did 3-2-1. I'll just give you three here. Here are three things that will help you as a coach respond to adversity or to losses or when the season starts to get difficult. Number one, identify what we did well. Even in your worst game and your worst practice, there's going to be things that you did well. Two, what did I learn? Those two are very important, but the third is the most important. How are we going to apply what we learned going forward? And let's say we learned that, so we lost a game and we did some good things. We rebounded well, we shot the ball well, but we learned that we have to start faster in order to give ourselves a chance to win. The third to apply that would be maybe we change the way we start practice. Maybe we change our pregame warm-up routine. And then when that happens, the next game that you really start fast, make sure you shine a big light on that and celebrate that with your team, because that is going to show the growth that you've had as a team. So one, what went well? Two, what did we learn? Three, how are we going to apply that going forward? And then make sure we celebrate that after.
Tiebacks. I love a good tie back. Like you said, now's the time where everything's going well. Nothing's gone wrong yet. So if you can tie back to your mindset right now, what you've learned right now, what you're working on right now, your culture right now, later, that'll be really helpful. Is it mailbag time?
It is mailbag time. Before I'll let you drive the mailbag. Before we do that, if you're watching on YouTube, please hit the like button for us, or share or comment if you have anything that you want to share with us. Great place is our community, or just comment on the YouTube page below. But make sure you're liking it and sharing it with a coaching friend of yours. All right, Claire, let's go mailbag.
All right, mailbag time. Mark, question for you. This is from, is it Alden? Coach Alden Arakaki said, how do you go about electing captains? You just mentioned the captain circle. What's your process with that?
Yeah, really good. I find when you elect captains, most coaches get really frustrated because it becomes a popularity contest. And Don Meyer, this is a quote from him, is you can elect captains, but you can't elect leaders. How can we make sure that our leaders or the people with the most influence are in the captain's role? Three questions that I would ask. Number one, ask your team, who would you go to if you were struggling? That's going to give you the player that is the connector, that's more the relational, that's the glue guy or girl on the team. Two, second question would be, we're going to lean on our captains as coaches to make decisions for our program. We're going to meet with them weekly. They're going to have to make tough decisions for this team, for you. Who do you want in the room with the coaches making these decisions for you? I think those two remove the popularity contest from the equation. Third way, hopefully you have some core values in your program. If you don't, think about this. We're all, you know, it's late October right now. Maybe you started practicing. You're likely in preseason workouts. Maybe just identify on your best days, what did we exemplify? Was it teamwork? Was it hard work? Was it excellence? Whatever it is, If you have your values or if not, identify some and then just ask your team, let's say excellence is our value. Who has exemplified or who has lived this value the best up until this point? That way it's not some futuristic wishful thinking of who is going to work hard or be unselfish or exhibit excellence. It's who's already doing it. I would do that for all of your values. That, let's say you have three values. That would give you your three value questions, your other two questions. That's five questions that you would ask. And I would take the top two, three, four, depending on how you structure your captain's council. And those would be my captains for the year.
Interesting. I like that. I feel like my approach, I love that approach. And I think that works super well for higher level teams, especially as you get into college, varsity, depending like what your personnel is. I've noticed a lot of questions in our community related to youth situations or people with like less skill, they're new to basketball, it's a C team, a freshman team, like all of these things. And so an alternative approach that I'd put out there is multiple captains and they can change. I've seen this done a bunch of different ways. Where, yeah, it's set after the preseason and it stays for the whole season, but there's a captain of energy, a captain of cleanup, a captain of, you know, strategy. Like each person has been chosen that really suits their strengths and multiple people feel like they have a person to go to. So that you kind of diversify the wealth of leadership, which I think can work well. The other approach even within that is the week to week. Like, oh, this week our captain is this person because, you know, they've lived up to our standards that we've set. And so they get, you know, a lot of people have the memento that they give out at the end of practice that leads into the next week and kind of just an honor of celebrating how that person has shown up so that it's not a captain that has been set and then fades off. And then you're like, why is this person our captain? They're not acting the same. So it keeps people on their toes in that way. But I'd say whatever approach you choose, communicate the why to your players. I actually had a pretty awkward situation in college. I was named captain as a freshman in university by the coach, but that was not really communicated to the players very well, which did not sit well with the upperclassmen. So, I mean, I was pumped. I was honored. I was looking up to them as role models and just happy to be there and was going to be myself no matter what, which is pretty vocal. But yeah, that I did not feel set up for success in that situation. So whatever approach you choose, I think works, as long as the players understand why that person has that role and what is expected of them.
Yeah. And I think the biggest takeaway is what you just touched on right there. Whatever approach you choose, let's be intentional instead of walking in the room and just saying, all right, team, time to elect captains, write down your top three choices. Not a very intentional approach. If you want great answers, you got to ask great questions.
Yeah. Well, let's continue. More great questions. Mailbag. Okay. Youth. I mentioned youth. There's been So this can kind of be broad because there's multiple questions in the community. I think they're all connected. One example was from our mailbag thread. Coach Vincent Pompey said, this is for youth basketball and Lock Left. We've had the same question for Race and Space, for Drive and Space. One of our principles is that we're working to be positionless and that it's too early for them to specialize and we don't want to narrow their scope. We're sacrificing some competitiveness, but not by not specializing. But is this a fair trade? What's your feedback on applying roles and at what age?
This is a good question. You know, when I hear positionless, I just think every player, every skill. And at the youth level, I would stay with that for as long as possible. And I would avoid assigning positions for as long as you possibly can. We also had a similar question about alignment. Should we be four out or five out for at the youth level? Again, same thing. Let's avoid positions as long as possible, but also let common sense prevail. If you've got somebody that's an obvious post player, then I wouldn't force them to play on the perimeter because that's not where they're best. And same thing here. we want to avoid specializing too early. And I know they're asking lock left specific. So their best on ball defender might be the wolf. Are we sacrificing positionless or every player, every skill by identifying a wolf at the youth level? I would say no, because that is more of a role than it is a position. So when you're the wolf, what do? Do? Right? You start at left, you get it left, you keep it left, or you get it to jail. That's not a position in basketball. That's not saying, hey, you're the point guard, right? So just think of it this way, your role, and everybody will fill these roles, because once you get in the half court, it changes. Now, by switching, we can keep players in their ideal role, same as we would on offense. Like, let's have you play to your strengths on both sides of the floor by clarifying your role, but we can do that without assigning a position.
Yeah, agreed. That's really well said. I think it's a bit of a graph. There's no, I know coaches would love a hard and fast rule, which if they're listening to Savvy, they know they're not going to get. But it's a bit of a graph constantly evolving, where it's like, oh, younger and earlier in season, more experimentation, older and later in season, a bit more strict. I know with our youth, so third through eighth grade girls that we work with at Savvy Academy in Phoenix, is we've rotated. So there is like a sandbox time, especially with our, I'd say up to seventh grade for sure. Every single practice, there's a good half to practice that's mostly sandboxes. It's experimentation. If we're rotating through positions, everybody's playing every position, both offensively and defensively. And then potentially the last game where it's like, okay, it's game time. Like, we're getting competitive. This is what you're probably going to play this weekend. And then they get to lock into their role and say like, okay, you're the wolf, you're the racker for the next 25 minutes. So they get some reps before the game that weekend. And then kind of sticking with those players for a couple weeks so that they get reps in the games. Everybody's getting reps in practice. People get to try it out in the game for a couple weeks. And then we identify like, oh, we'd like to try you in this, not because you're good at it, because you need to get better at it. Whereas other people, hey, we've seen real growth in this area. Now we want you to take the lead in this role. So kind of using it both as a learning opportunity and a celebration of their growth is really, really fun and has worked for us really well.
I like it. Claire, let me flip it to you. Mm-hmm. We had somebody in the mailbag. Jeff asked about nines finishing. Are you familiar?
Yes and no. When I saw that question as well, and I thought, who knows what Tyler's talking about? And if you know Tyler.
And when Tyler's talking, he's like, who knows what he's talking about, right?
Yeah. You figure it out. It's really for you to think critically and apply it as needed. So yes, if you know Tyler, he's probably used the same drill name for different drills, and also used different drills under the same name. So that may be a thing. The two things that I think he may have been talking about, and that I would suggest anyways, based on a question about nines finishing, are one, something that we do kind of in our warm-up, in our prime a lot, would be just finishing against contact at the rim. So really just going for a minute, like this is just getting the body warm, priming their body for contact. And encouraging both finishing off of two, creative finishing, stride stops, as well as walling up for the person on defense. So coaching both sides, but honestly, as simple as going for a minute, having people on both elbows, having somebody on their inside shoulder, driving, finishing. So that's something we do quite often at the beginning of practice. Now, an alternative that came to mind that I don't think this is what Tyler was talking about in this instance, but that I really like is just the decathlon for nines and finishing, and just like a quick cardio. If you're looking at it as a warm-up, as a finisher, as a standalone workout that your athletes can do on their own, is our decathlon, which has five finishing or shooting drills and five ball handling drills, a minute each. So you have a 10-minute workout, 10 different skills, gets your blood pumping, gets them ready to go.
Yeah, beautiful. I think the message here is the intentional language. You're talking about how Tyler will change the name of a drill based on what we're emphasizing in that drill. By calling it nines finishing, well, we're gonna get nines, right? We're shooting nines, but instead of saying, all right, we're finishing, or we're shooting these layups or this type of finish, nines finishing connects our language to the skill. And so anything that you're doing in practice, any drill that you're running where your players are likely to get a nine, maybe you're using guided defense, could be nines finishing. And then I'll give you one other practical way where we could add a read here, could be an either or game. So nines finishing could be, let's start with a small advantage. Like you said, maybe we're starting shoulder game. If you get a nine, take it. If not, you have to pivot, which is going to make your player stop, pivot, be patient at the rim. That could be nines finishing. And that is where I think the another takeaway is, don't think of these things in terms of drills where like we do it this way once. So what's the name of that drill? Or when would I do that drill? You're shaping the environment for a skill to emerge. And we do that through games and adding constraints. So you don't have to have 100 different drills for nines finishing, or nines finishing have to be a specific drill. It just probably means we added a constraint to a finishing drill where we're getting nines.
Oh my gosh. You got me fired up talking about practice planning, because I'm so excited. Just you talking about that for 1 minute made me so excited to tune into the November cohort, where it's going to be all practice planning. And like, it is about design. It's about intentional language. It's about these tweaks that you can make and why you're doing something. I'm just so excited to learn more from you this month.
Well, so I love talking practice. It might be my favorite part of coaching. And people ask me all the time, what do I miss about coaching? It would be the practice, although we're in the gym enough working with players. It's a little different, right? We're there for 2-3 days. We're in and out. Although we're running workouts and practices and teaching the game a lot, I miss the marathon of stacking practices on top of each other and seeing the improvement. But that's one way. I was blessed to work for a really, really good practice coach. I learned a ton from him. And then just being a lifelong learner, I've learned so much about practice planning and execution. That is where you earn your paycheck as a coach. I think when there's this like misconception in coaching, and I think as coaches, we probably understand this, but as outsiders, you don't. It's like, oh, like a coach shows up on game day and coaches. Coaching is so much more than that. And you're going to have way more practices than you ever will in games, especially over the life of your career. So if you want to earn your paycheck, if you want to improve your teams to play at the highest level that they possibly can, more intentional practice planning and execution, which like you said, we'll dive into over the month of November. I can't wait.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you want to enjoy the journey, you better figure out how to enjoy practice. So may as well make them fun, figure out what you like about them, how to learn. Okay, I'm really excited for your game of the week, but I do want to cover this last mailbag question that I saw, and I'm interested to hear your thoughts as well on Lockleff install. So I know Coach Crawford has been, she's been asking questions about Lockleff install. We have a great framework in our Lockleff worksheet that coaches can follow along with, but it is only 4 sessions. It gives you kind of, all right, how do you start? Get these first 4 practices under your belt, hit the ground running, take it from there. Obviously, we can continue to support you through that. But yeah, it's scary to kind of jump off from a script into, all right, I am now the lead in this, and this is something new. So my thoughts, she had a few different questions about it, but my encouragement to her and any other coaches installing a new system, whether that's Lockleff or anything else, is repeat, tweak, and plus one. You can use those same 4 practice plans that we give you and just change the focus on one of the drills. Exactly like you were saying, Mark, like use, it's the same structure, but you call it something different because what you're going to teach or give feedback on is different that time. So repeat the structure, tweak the emphasis or the scoring, and then plus one. I guarantee you, your players are not 100% experts in Lockleff, in the first 3 layers, whatever it is that you're working on after 4 sessions. It is a marathon, and it's okay to repeat. Now, if you're just using the exact same drills, the exact same structure, everything the same all season, and you're not kind of intentionally thinking about what's the next step? What did I see last week? What can change this week that's going to take us one step forward? Then yeah, you get into some trouble there. You get bored. It's not as enjoyable. You feel like you're hitting your head against the wall. But absolutely repeat things until they're done. And in terms of install as well, don't feel like you need to cover all 10 layers as you install a new system. For us, Lock Left, Race and Space, it is 10 layers. Most people only get to layer 1, 2, 3 in their first season. You pull things from the future layers, but there is no pressure and no need to go beyond what your players are ready for. You can still be successful at the core level.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on installs?
Yeah, I'm glad you actually mentioned layers 1, 2, 3. That's where I was going to go, is layer 1, lock the ball, layer 2, hunt the pass, layer 3, build the wall. That's your fundamental of defense. So it's like your base layers. That's why they're layers 1, 2, 3. That's how you take away 9s or 7s. So what I would do, if you're a few days in the practice, all right, how are we giving up 9s? How are we giving up 7s? And then that might be how you tweak, like you were saying. Nothing wrong with repeating, but then you add some constraints, you add some conditions, you shape that game or environment. Maybe we're giving up 7s in transition. Okay, well then we got to work our transition D. Or maybe we're giving up 7s on from the corner off drive and kick. All right, well that means we either got to clean up our snipe or our gap positions, depending on what side of the ball it's on. Maybe we're over committing in our skirmishes. All right, so we're going to address our skirmishes now. We're still focused on those base layers, but we're just a little bit more intentional about how we're going to deepen the knowledge and execution in our team.
Yeah, that's really good. My favorite word from teaching, back in my teaching days, I still teach, but as a classroom teacher, was the zone of proximal development, which is just, are you in your zone really? Like, is it too challenging? Is it too easy? A new system is a lot. It's a lot of information, both for yourself and for players. And so there's some comfort in doing something a second time and feeling like you're mastering it and then shifting, but not adding too much at once.
So. Yeah, rule of thumb. If you ever install a new drill or a game, commit to doing it at least 2 days in a row. The first day you do it, you're just more teaching the drill, the setup. And then by the time players are comfortable, sometimes it's you're moving on. Second, third day of doing it, that's when they're really going to go deeper into their learning. So really good. Claire, thanks for facilitating the mailbag. Well done. Let's go game of the week. My game of the week is based on a question that I get a lot. How do we install Rose series? And coaches are usually looking for drills. There's really no, I mean, a drill would teach the action, and there are a couple that we use. They'll be in the Drive and Space course that's coming out soon. But I wanted to share this. And for coaches that don't know what fingers is, on a pass across, we're in Rose series. One of our actions in Rose series would be a fingers cut. It's just a 45 cut. We're going to cut through to the corner, which is going to give player two a big gap to drive in. Okay, so how would a drill that we would use to install this would really be a game, because we want to be more games-based than drill based. So this is how we would do it. Now, I don't have film of us doing this one-on-one, or really two-on-one. So you're going to see an extra player here in the dunker, but here's the setup. We've got a player to the right side over here that's out of the screen. And then we've got one-on-one in the other action spot. Rose series, the trigger or the action always comes from that ball across the midline. So that's our first pass. This player that's fingers cutting through, he's out of the game at that point. This is just to start the drill or the game. And we're just going to play one-on-one from a fingers cut. I'm a big proponent of playing one-on-one live at practice, but we don't just want to check it up and play one-on-one all the time. We want to change the way that we do that. And how can we incorporate actions in there so players get used to creating an advantage and playing off a fingers cut? So I'll give you four things here that I've been playing with a lot lately, and how to articulate our offensive phases. We've talked about neutral phase, advantage phase, which we call dominoes. There are four layers to offense that are going to get you in either phase. Number one is we create the advantage. Number two is we use that advantage. 3, we find the big advantage, and 4, we finish. So I think we need to prepare players to play in unscripted moments of the game. And unscripted means that we're playing off the cuff. So I have this like cheesy acronym of cuff, C-U-F-F, create, use, find, and finish. When we're neutral, we create advantage. Once we created small advantage, we use that advantage to expand our advantage. And then we find the big advantage once we've expanded it. If we're at big advantage, we have the opportunity to shoot a 9 or a 7. So then we finish the advantage. I would build our system from the bottom up. So do we have a team that can finish 9s and 7s? Then do we have a team that can find the player that's open for a 9 or 7 when we have advantage? Next layer would be when we have a small advantage, can we turn that small advantage into a big advantage? And then last, when we're neutral, can we run an action to get us into small advantage? An action that we would always start with would be fingers. So this would be a way that we run an action to create an advantage. And then we're training players how to use, find, and finish the advantage. So 2-on-1 fingers, easy way to incorporate an action out of your offense to play some 1-on-1, but also get you from neutral to dominoes.
Wow. Mark, the way you deconstruct the game is impressive. Yeah, just those layers to make it bite-sized information and step-by-step. What do you find, which layer would you find is the most difficult to make the jump? Like, where do people get stuck for the most part?
Great question. This actually came up with a college coach that we consult for this morning. It is using the advantage. So many shots are taken with small advantage. And those are the so-so, those are our 5s, right? It's like, I don't really have a great advantage. This isn't a great shot, but we have a small advantage, which means one domino has fallen. Can we drive, kick, share, space, get that ball clicking? Because every time we shoot it, drive it, or move it, theoretically another domino falls and that expands the advantage. So what I see a lot in early teams that are adopting conceptual offense is, we run an action, we get a so-so advantage and take a so-so shot. Let's turn that so-so or small advantage into a big advantage. If we can expand that advantage, now we get 9s and 7s.
That's good stuff. I like that. I'm going to have to, I haven't seen that in practice.
I just came up with playing off the cuff not too long ago. I've heard find, use, create the advantage. To me, it's just always been backwards. It's never stuck with me. It's like, how do you find the advantage if we haven't created it yet, right? Like find the advantage, use the advantage, then create the advantage. So I understand and appreciate the thought process because that's how cuff came about with create, use, find, and finish for me. It wasn't until I put it in that order where I'm like, okay, that's a framework I can teach out of.
Yeah. No, the acronym, I love a good acronym. Which then is also sticky language. It's like you're using all of the teach better things at once. Is it teach better? We close now? Oh my goodness. Okay. I'm excited to teach better. That's always my goal. And hopefully this helps some other coaches do so as well. The piece that I wanted to share is small group debriefs. Increase those. If you're not doing them, start doing it. If you do it a little bit, do it more. If you're doing it a lot, here's some tips that maybe you can incorporate into what you're doing already. And by small group debriefs, I mean player-led. Great to have coaches there to help facilitate conversations and see what your players are talking about. But I'd say 3. 3 is always our magic number, has been for me. Love a group of 3. And the 3 pieces related to these groups that I want to hammer home is their value and also how to execute. So in having small group debriefs, say after a drill, at water breaks, before practice, after practice, in film sessions, like all of these things can happen, any dead ball time, like making it just a normal thing that you do so that players start naturally doing it as well. The first big value add is that it encourages observation and feedback. If you want to have a culture of celebration, if you want to have a culture of coaching, then players need to be intentionally watching what's going on around them so that they understand, like, what is happening. They're aware, but also know that they're going to be called out on to speak to those things. They need to be ready to share what they saw that was awesome, and they need to be ready to coach the gaps. So just having regular small player group debriefs is going to encourage them to be watching. And then the next piece is like, okay, what do they watch? Because at first you're going to be like, hey, you're going to have to talk about some things. You're going to have to speak about it. You might need to watch to figure out what you're going to say. That is where most players struggle. And the feedback that we get from coaches is like, how do I get my players to talk more on the court, off the court? There's a lack of energy. They're not saying what I want. This is the next step, is educate. So having the small group debriefs allows you an opportunity to educate both on vision and communication. So first, to direct their vision, is asking them questions. If you just say, go debrief in groups, you're going to get the whole range of silence to players just talking about their week, to talking about things that you aren't even working on in that drill. So I'd say get specific at first, educate them on what you want them to look for with a question. So that can start after a game happens, like, hey, I want you to, you know, we do even just like, learn, improve. That's like the broad scope, like, learn, improve. Like, what was something you liked that a teammate did? So that they're looking for a celebration, they're speaking specifically to an action of a specific teammate. Like, that's going to guide the discussion. And then you can get more specific into like strategy and technique and things like that once they're used to it of, say, in film, right? You could apply this in film, whether you show a clip and then they have to discuss in groups, like, what did number 23 do on this pick and roll? And what did you see the person in the back doing? It can get more broad, but educate their vision. And then as you see how they're communicating, you can also kind of coach them up in how they're talking to each other, whether that's super sassy and maybe they need to work on their delivery. Maybe they need to work on their confidence. Maybe they need to work on using the team language. Like, they're saying the same things, but not in the words where we can have that shared vocabulary. So yeah, educate both their vision and how they're communicating it. And then third is, again, a value add is just, you need to empower their voices. These small group debriefs empowers everyone to speak. If you have just the captain speaking, you're going to get just the captain speaking. If it's a large group, you're probably going to get the same few players. And there absolutely is a place where certain players should have more of a voice than others. But everyone needs to be comfortable. When you put somebody on the floor, you need to trust that they know what to say, that they have their teammates' backs. You want everyone to have a voice, at least that's my opinion. So everyone needs to feel comfortable and assigning, like, nope, it's not just, Claire as captain speaking to the other two teammates in her small group debrief. Everyone needs a turn to speak. The most practical way that I've seen this in play is when I was coaching at Ottawa U, we were in the running for a national championship. And that year, so going into the following season, we had a lot of new players come in, a lot of freshmen. Over the summer season, we put together like a handbook, a guidebook of our defense, of our offense. There's links to synergy, all of these things, but we assigned basically a section to different groups. And so it was their job. There'd be, an upperclassman, like junior and a freshman, all paired together, and they had to study the film and then teach it to the team. But each week it was the same group for a month. And so every week it had to be a different leader. They could get feedback from their older teammates who understood, they'd seen the game film, so they knew what was going on. But that person, every single person, had an opportunity to speak and teach the team on what they had learned. And yeah, there were mistakes made. You're like, well, actually, that's not what we want to do. But the fact that you watched it, came up with that conclusion that now we're talking about it, actually helps everybody learn better. So yeah, empower everyone to have a voice in that and just make it as frequent as possible if you really want educated, like encouraged, empowered voices.
Yeah, so good. common question we get is, how do we get our teams to talk? How do we increase our level of communication? One, you got to have a systematic approach. You got to have these tools and methods in order to do that. Hope is not a strategy. We can't just go into every year hoping our team communicates better. So if you want your team to increase their communication or communicate at a higher level, you got to open up the space. Claire, great share there on small group debriefs, leading with questions, telling them what to look for, and then empower their voices. That is an awesome Teach Better tip for this week. Claire, thanks for being back. I know this is going to be another popular episode. Appreciate you and everyone else spending the hours time with us. And if you're not in our community, please join us there. We have over 1,700 coaches in our community. And then, as we mentioned earlier in the podcast, we're going to go into our November deep dive on practice planning and execution. Can't wait for that. Claire, thanks and happy belated birthday.
Thank you. Stay savvy.